Hello, everybody, and welcome to our panel discussion on zombies and big cat zombies, hosted by Central Florida Animal Reserve. My name is Oslo Gonter, and I'll be your moderator this evening for this discussion. So let's start by introducing the panel here that I have for our discussion. First up is Dr. Cymbal Wiltz. He's been working with big cats for over 15 years and is an expert in big cat behavior. He's also a pharmacist that's currently studying zombification medications. Welcome,
Hi.
Simba.
Hi, everyone.
Next up is Mr. Ron Smike. Ron is a visiting fellow from Arkham University. He is an expert in post-mortem behavioral studies with a specialization in zombies. Welcome, Ron.
Thank you.
Our final panelist is Brian Boots. Brian is a former zombie who visited a shaman in Sedona for an experimental healing and restoration process. He is a recovering zombie, and we're lucky to have him here today. Welcome, Brian. So let's get started with one obvious question, which is going to be the types of different zombies. I know there's two different kinds that are most prevalent. One of them is the kind that's the reanimated corpse, which is known from Haitian and African folklore, where witch doctors and sorcerers have been known to animate corpses. The other type is the more common victims of the Solanum virus. And so my first question to you guys is, do you have evidence of both of these different kinds of zombies? And what are the differences between them? And I guess because, Ron, you're our expert on zombie behavior, let's start this question with you.
Well, yes, indeed. There are distinct variations between the Haitian and the Hollywood, as I prefer to them, zombies. The Haitian zombie has actually been documented by Zora Neale Hurston in her book Tell My Horse. She had this incident in 1937 while researching Haitian folklore. A zombie entered the village while she was conducting her research, and she recorded it. She also has a 1943 interview video discussing the incident. So the Haitian zombie is possibly a result of true poisoning and undead things. The possibilities include the use of pufferfish, the tetradoxin, or cane toad extracts. But it's also possible, I'm developing a theory, the Haitian zombie could be a psychosocial phenomenon where the person has been culturally imbibed to believe in zombies. They have a near-death experience. Someone uses that when they come back to say, you are now a zombie and you are now my servant, and they feel trapped inside that zombie role.
But they're not actually a zombie, is what you're saying.
They believe. That's all that matters.
You're suggesting zombieism is a hypnosis?
It's a self-induced state. It could be. It's an operative hypothesis that I'm working on.
What about the Solanum virus version of zombies?
Well, I am not too for that. However, I do believe it could be misidentified as a prion a vector. The prion is known more colloquially as the source for a mad cow disease or Creutzfeldt-Jakob syndrome, which is a misfolding of proteins inside the brain to reduce cognitive functionality. And I believe the zombie desire to eat brains is a result of a desire to regenerate their dwindling cranial supply with fresh matter as the folding process destroys their existing processes.
Okay, so a follow-up question to Mr. Simba here. Do these different kinds of zombies also occur in big cats?
I just want to say that sitting next to the ex-zombie, maybe I should move over some.
I assure you, I'm fully rehabilitated.
That's pretty good.
Yes, that's good. Well, at this point, we have not necessarily seen any true evidence of zombieism in big cats, although once they come out of a nap, they certainly look like a zombie. But that's common to all cats, isn't it? However, because these are brain-related diseases, it's fully possible that big cats could indeed have a zombie condition. And I have been tremendously concerned with the lack of research in this area. The NIH is spending all of this money trying to get information for human zombies, but is not spending enough time trying to address the big cat zombie issue.
Well, then the next follow-up question is for Brian here. What kind of zombie were you?
Well, since I've never actually heard of a Haitian zombie, I guess I'm being dubbed in the / mad cow Hollywood zombie-esque bucket.
I see. But at least you're speaking now, so that's a good thing.
Oh, yes.
It must have taken a lot of speech therapy in order to get back into
that's
that
part of the rehabilitation process.
And regenerative cranial matter.
Yes. Higher brain functions are always a plus.
There wasn't a brain transplant, was there?
No.
Oh, just checking.
No, just plasma mostly.
So getting to another question, I know in the case of reanimated dead, the zombies are said to have no will of their own, and you had mentioned that, Ron, in your discussion. Is that true of the Selenium virus zombies? Do they have a will of their own?
Well, I do not know if they have a will as much as they have primal urges. We have no evidence of them having any desires to fulfill apart from the very primitive functionality of wishing to procreate by slashing others or feeding themselves by ingesting others.
Do you have any answers for that, the rest of you guys? Simba and Brian?
Well, I believe what he calls the Haitian zombies are, I guess what we call, or I've heard the term, I've never seen one, cursed zombies, which more or less are controlled by some sort of master or something. While I've heard rumors of such, I have not actually seen any of these.
So you don't believe in those?
I haven't seen any, so...
Okay.
Well, did you see any while you were a zombie?
No.
Do you have, like, zombie fraternization, socialization kind of things? You know, like you get together and talk
AAZ zombie meetings?
AAZ, you know. It's not the American Academy of Zookeepers, by the way.
Well, we do actually have support groups. We have not actually discussed...
So you're not the only recovered zombie?
Oh, no.
Oh, okay.
They are among us, ladies and gentlemen.
I just enunciate a lot better than most.
So for the Selenium type of zombies, we know that it's passed by a bite for somebody that has the virus, passed to another person, or maybe to a big cat, depending on how it works. How are the other methods for it to be passed? Can it be passed by mosquitoes, for example?
I don't believe there's any scientific evidence proving that hypothesis.
Well, I can tell you from personal experience, it happens from a bite, usually a transformation of blood. And then, of course, you're infused with their mucus and blood and flesh and other bits. I don't think a mosquito could be a valid carrier because it has to be quite a bit of matter for you to change.
Well, I know,
so you've never encountered anyone suffered from a radiation-induced zombie state as it prevalent in certain descriptions?
Radiation-induced? No, I have not.
Hmm. Well, I guess from our standpoint, our concern would more be that not the zombie biting the cat, but the cat biting the zombie.
That was my question to you, actually, is that if a big cat eats a zombie, does it become a zombie? or does it have to be bitten by a zombie? What are the transference mechanisms for the big cat?
Well, these are all theories that I would much prefer not to find out. To be perfectly honest, in the event of a zombie outbreak, I would certainly hope that all of the cats would choose to stay secure, but we have to remember that zombieism for humans is definitely something that lowers their inhibitions. After all, I mean, everybody that's sitting around here in the room, when's the last time that you looked at somebody and said, hey, I think your brains could be pretty tasty? That probably
Do
hasn't happened.
Do I have to happen. Answer that?
I probably...
7 minutes ago?
7 minutes ago.
As Simba moves a little bit further away from
A little bit further away. No, you don't have to answer that. In fact, please don't.
I can tell you a little bit. I think most of the larger predators tend to avoid zombies because I've heard some in our support groups, there are a few that suffer from hyenas and vultures and other carrion eaters that could sometimes be a problem.
That's true.
And attacking you as the zombie?
Yes, attacking others. Now, since I'm a North American zombie, I really have had little to no problems with vultures and hyenas. However, in the more rural areas, it's my understanding that it has been an issue.
I see. Well, you know, the myth of the man-eater is always prevalent in big cats. It's not true that the big cats are not man-eaters conventionally. That's generally only for the weak and for the ones that, you know, really can't hunt anymore. But if they eat a zombie, it's not technically a man, so I guess that makes it okay.
Skeptical of that one.
I can tell you from my support group meetings that zombies don't have any rights whatsoever in the United States.
There's probably an issue of the whole living thing.
Exactly.
I know that from studies that the Selenium virus is known to attack a person, the host, I should say, and within 24 hours, it stops their heart, stops their body, and then reanimates them within 24 hours, and then they become the undead zombie. Is that what happened to you, Brian?
I guess what you're calling the incubation process, or transformation process, varies on how much matter was transferred between zombie and host, as you say.
Okay.
I, of course, was unconscious the whole time, and then, of course, during the zombie times, it's kind of fuzzy, so I can't really tell you the exact time, but I can tell you it was a full day before I realized that obviously something was amiss.
And how did they manage to get you to this shaman in Sedona?
Well, apparently I was subdued first in order for that to happen. And I guess that there are more... apparently the shaman feels that there is more than just the blood component to this, where a spiritual reawakening is required. I don't know if I adhere to that or not. I can't honestly say. I can say that from my support groups, some of the other zombies don't feel the same as we do, I guess is a good way to put it. And so they aren't as connected to humanity as other human beings, even though their heart now beats or doesn't beat.
Doesn't beat.
It depends on the nature of the what you guys are calling the host, or what I call the zombie.
So you're the beneficiary of a zombie intervention, basically.
It was both a zombie intervention and some spiritual awakening of some kind.
Spiritual? That's interesting.
Spiritual awakening of the zombie. So this is now becoming a religious experience.
Well, it was a spiritual awakening of his prior self. I guess the soul which would either left when he died and was re-entered, or had simply been placed in abeyance, was then re-energized.
So you put Brian on pause and you play zombie.
Sounds correct, yes.
That's an interesting theory.
Well, it does raise... It's an interesting question in philosophy. The whole zombie hypothesis is, where does that spark of humanity come from? Is it something integral into the physicality of the being? Or is it indeed a divine manifestation? Or something non-spiritual that is not currently understood by our current science? And if these zombie experiences are correct, then they could be construed as proof towards the physicality, that the innate essence of the human structure is innate to the being, as opposed to it being an external influence.
Well, this creates a whole separate set of issues now. Now we're talking about, let's say we have a zombie tiger, for example, and let's face it, if it's not naps, then, you know, it may be weak kidneys that gets a tiger in the end. You take those two things away, and what do you get? You get this invincible killing machine that is just going to rampage through the rest of the world and take over everything.
Well, I believe there's some instance that zombies have some fear reactions to things, at least according to the initial Dawn of the Dead movie, they did have fear reactions to fire. More recent productions have not had this thing. So it's possible the zombie culture is evolving to discover that, you know, flaming is not necessarily a bad thing, or that they can indeed outrun it occasionally, or outshamble it.
Well, actually, the studies I've done show that the zombies that are afraid of fire are more the Haitian-type reanimated zombies. Those that are not afraid of fire are the selenium-infected virus zombies. They have no reaction to fire.
Our cats are afraid of boxes.
Okay.
So if we're talking about this, there's your scientific experiment right there. We'll get a cat and, you know, we'll give them a nice and controlled environment, and then we will expose them to this virus, at which point then we will expose them to a box, then see whether or not they can actually sustain a campaign against this inanimate object for a long period of time.
What if you put the box on fire?
Well, that would be a secondary phase. You don't want to introduce too many variables into the experiment, but I believe you have a good possibility for a well-controlled study here. You could vary the box material and the box size proportional to the cat.
Now, I hate to be so pragmatic, but just so I understand what you guys are concerned about, is if you were to zombify a tiger, and the tiger, you're worried that the tiger will be less inhibited as opposed to the actual spreading of the virus?
Yes, because basically right now, natural behavior, the only thing that keeps tigers from just rampaging over human society is the fact that they're naturally wary of us. They see these two-legged creatures, they don't know what it is, so they tend to run away. So now, if you translate that to saying, hey, they've got brains in there, and those brains are pretty tasty and pretty full, then the tiger could end up becoming quite the interesting predator.
Okay, well, let's get to another question then. Do zombies have any superhuman type, zombie big cats or humans, by the way, do they have any superhuman senses or abilities?
Tigers already have superhuman senses.
A tiger. Does a zombie tiger have any more super tiger or...
This super tiger senses. Is there a change in the physiology that changes the way that they interact with
I don't believe they have any enhanced senses. However, the suppression of the internal noise of the living corpus could cause them to perceive things that normally we wouldn't because of the interaction of our internal heartbeat and such on our ears, which blocks a certain low level of audiology to us.
So perhaps they're more attuned to the senses that they do have.
Yes.
Combined with your spiritual theory, they are not only in touch with the earth, but they're listening only to the earth.
Hmm.
Well, that's a very interesting theory. But I can tell you, from practical experience, they do have heightened senses.
I see.
But typically the eyesight is degraded, but it's heightened smell and heightened taste and heightened sound are very prevalent in humans.
How much heightened?
For example, I can tell you what you had to drink and eat today.
How much heightened taste do you really need if you're going after brains?
Well, that's an interesting question. And it's not so much brains as it is, you know, everyone in the Hollywood, they, you know, it's, oh, brains. Well, that is a sweet meat. It is still...
Scooting over now.
It is obviously you don't smell brains until you have an open skull. So it's more of blood and flesh and trauma that will attract the zombies as opposed to brains. But obviously once the zombie arrives on the scene, he knows what the sweetmeats are.
So leading to another question, do zombies have any intelligence whatsoever? Well, I know you're recovering, you've got some of yours back, but at the time you were a zombie.
Technically, I could be considered still a zombie today or an ex-zombie. The jury's still out. But I can tell you that, yes, you definitely lose a lot of the higher brain functions, as well as the ability to speak to some degree.
Going back to your idea of senses and heightened senses, how is it that zombies that are incredibly injured, even those that have no eyes, how are they still able to find prey?
Well, I told you, they have a very heightened sense of smell and vibration and hearing. Their eyesight typically is not heightened in any way, and usually because of the death of the cataracts, you sometimes lose it, and there are blind zombies. And they can function just fine without eyesight whatsoever.
It's a zombie dog.
Or is it like the Terminator thing where the dog knows that you're here?
Actually, dogs do sense zombies and will bark in the presence of zombies, so that dog may very well be barking because I am here.
I see. Okay. Well, that's possible.
That's possible. You know, we know from physiology that the cats have extraordinarily heightened nasal passages where they have such a density that they can smell in high definition for a lot longer than we would as humans. So now you add in the Solanum virus, you know, if we're going to go with the Solanum theory as opposed to the prion theory, neither of which I'm totally sure of yet.
What's the prion theory?
The prion theory is the prions are the operative agent for Creutzfeldt-Jakob and other brain degenerative diseases, which reduce the higher functions, produce a staggering gait, compulsive behavior. The earliest known identified exemplar of the seed was called Scrapies because the sheep and goats that got it would compulsively scrape themselves against a fence or a rock or something.
Scrapies still exist, by the way. So this is not fiction here. We're talking about real conditions.
And the prions are a very interesting thing because they seem to violate the central dogma of microbiology set out by Francis Crick, winner of the Nobel Prize for DNA. he's laid out the theory that DNA created RNA, which created the proteins. So proteins do not create, they simply operate. But something, these prion foldings, misfold, and then start affecting other proteins. So this could be a sufficiently advanced science that's indistinguishable from magic to us now, to paraphrase Asimov, something we do not fully understand yet. Others simply argue that the misfold simply causes a misreading of the operative portions of the protein, and it isn't actually creating anything. It's just causing a different sequence. But then again, if the end result is different and the data is different, isn't that a form of creation?
All of this so that we can just avoid getting eaten?
Well, I personally wish to remain whole and keep my prions inside my cranium. Dr. Wilkes, I would like to discuss, we haven't touched much on the potential for a drug-induced zombie. I mean, you talked about the cats earlier being in a zombie state when they first got up, and the humans have many low-level behaviors, such as thermal control and sleepwalking, which are not under the control of the conscious mind, which could be considered zombie behaviors. Could these be induced by scopolamine or crocodile, that desomorphine street drug that caused horrific results earlier on? And in the Haitian culture, the Bokor, the sorcerer, usually an acolyte of Baron Samedi, their powders have been analyzed and found to contain tetrodotoxin from the pufferfish and cane toad extract.
All of which are very viable physiological mechanisms to produce the symptoms of zombification, as well as several other drugs, not the least of which to mention some of the atypical antipsychotics like Haldol, which a lot of people have heard of because they've been given to people, and it causes almost a Parkinsonian kind of syndrome. But if you're going to get your speedy zombie out of that, you've got to get a drug that is going to completely knock out somebody's sense of self, heighten their awareness, or at least make them think that they're heightening their awareness, and then also give them that superhuman strength and whatnot. So what we're really talking about is something more like PCP. And
now you've been studying these
zombie medifications.
I'm the only one with bloopers today, I think.
On Thursdays, we have an enunciation class. We haven't had any live people there, but
you show up, you come.
Go for it. This would be a breakthrough in human-zombie relations.
I can tell you that, there are certain drugs that simulate zombification. Obviously, you talk about the super strength. Yes, zombies are stronger than the average human. But at the end of the day, they mostly don't feel the average human, so they go beyond their limits. Obviously, PCP, tar heroin, some of these street drugs that I don't know anything about, but I would imagine they would cause the same.
Does it somehow make you like less willing to try street drugs?
Absolutely.
Seems like that.
Absolutely. I've already eaten things I don't want to eat.
Well, so, hopefully not tonight.
Moving away now.
Scooting away yet again. He's going to be by himself on this stage before we last him off.
But going back to the zombification medications that you study, are you studying medications to help cure zombies, or are you studying medications to create zombies?
In order to understand the mechanism of action, surely you need to have a ready source of the actual disease to study it in. And unfortunately, due to recent zombie outbreaks, we have had a number of subjects that have been able to be studied in. Now, unfortunately, the regulatory environment is such now that the FDA has to do special fast-track things that, require all kinds of paperwork and whatnot. But I think that fundamentally everybody is interested in a cure for zombieism. And it is in our interest of our species, of course, and both species, really. If I were to reach across the aisle to our zombie brethren, if you can call it that.
Species?
I don't know if they are a species yet. This is an excellent question. But if we don't manage to get this under control, then there will be no humans because the zombies will take over everything. And then what will they eat?
That brings me to the next question, though. from some of the studies I've done, I understand that zombies no longer have functioning digestive systems. Why do they eat anything at all?
Well, as I said, I believe it is an attempt to rebuild an operative matter in their brains that is decaying, and then when the first times it's by accident, they're just consuming anything and everything, but when they get to the brain, they get a rush of increased responsiveness and awareness, so it becomes a learned behavior.
A learned behavior.
Yes. I mean, just like, you know, when you're sick for certain things, you tend to crave certain foods. It's the same sort of thing. They eat brains, they feel better. So they eat more brains and they feel better. It's very simple, actually.
Are you saying that eating more brains somehow helps cure the zombie?
No, I think it prevents their uttermost decay. Because after all, there is a current analysis believes that the extent lifespan of a zombie might be 10 to 12 years. Their decay, unless they're expedited by a vulture, seems to be slowly, extremely degraded from the typical human corpus. But they continue to decay. But after 10 or 12 years, they're falling apart. But their brains would fall apart a lot sooner if they did not replenish that supply because of the prion folding, destroying their cranial matter.
Well, I guess getting back to Brian then, you must not have been a zombie for very long to actually have, you know, working parts now.
Exactly. I was told it was a week and a half, could have been 2 weeks. At the end of the day, obviously, there is a rush for brains, and it is a learned response. Your body will do what your conscious or unconscious mind won't. So I can tell you that...
Going back to the physicality aspect.
Yeah, there are those zombies that no longer have any higher cognitive functions or obviously a digestive tract that's worth anything, and they will continue to eat or consume until their brain no longer functions to move their parts.
Fantastic. So all we need to do is find a place that there's no brains, and then we'll be fine. So everybody run to Congress.
Well, again... Well, Congress might likely be safe from the epidemic if, in fact, zombies only ate brains, then you would be okay. But unfortunately, they will consume all your flesh. It just happens to be the brains are the tastiest flesh that, as the doctor pointed out, gives them a rush.
So if you want, like, poisonous brains, we can just go to Facebook?
I can tell you from a personal experience that brains pretty much taste the same.
Backing away now.
All right, so we've talked about the digestive system not working. I also understand that the lungs in a zombie do not work, but yet they have this moan that you often hear. Why do zombies moan?
Was it good for them too?
Okay, moving on. Physical manifestation for zombies is that they move so slowly and cannot run. Do you have any insights into that and why that is?
Well, I can tell you that there are zombies where obviously the muscles don't work the way they're supposed to, and obviously as your flesh decays, you know, you use the muscles you have. So if you have one leg, you move on one leg. You have one arm, you crawl on one arm.
Your sense of balance wasn't disrupted?
No. I would say like a drunk. You lose some equilibrium, but you are still able to maintain upright as long as your muscles are okay. And your skeletal system, obviously. As things decay, obviously, mobility degrades. But a fresh zombie is a fast zombie.
That's good to know.
Is that true of the big cat zombies? Same thing?
Well, you know, I've always said that you never have to outrun the big cat. You just have to outrun the person next to you. And the same thing really applies for the zombie scenario as well. You know, if you can outrun the person next to you or outrun the zombie, you know, because they're not going to be able to heal if they do a really strenuous bit of workout. So just try to stay away from them. But, you know, you're talking about, for the big cats at least, you know, creatures that are running 35, 40 miles an hour, you're not going to get away from that very well.
Even a zombie that can run that fast.
Yeah, especially a zombie, because then they're not going to get tired. You know, that's what stops most of them. That's why it's short sprints.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see a cheetah that takes off after prey. You know, it lasts all of 30 seconds, and then they spend the next hour trying to catch their breath. If they don't have to catch their breath, then we're in trouble.
Well, if their lungs don't work, they don't have any breath to catch.
That's true. They're trying to catch our breath.
Well, that's true. So that brings me to the next question, then. What can humans do to protect themselves from zombies, from big cat or otherwise?
Well, number one, don't panic.
Don't panic.
You just gather your belongings, find yourself a place to fort up, and wait for them to rot.
10 or 12 years later?
Yeah, well...
10 or 12 years? Which is a hunker down? Is that the best we've got?
I don't believe the duck in cover approach is going to work.
It didn't work before.
I think they outnumber us, and they really don't care in their human wave attacks.
I would suggest a deadbolt.
Is that a pun?
Is that a living deadbolt?
A living deadbolt?
Gosh. Now, another advantage would be to flee from the densely populated areas where the rates of infection and the zombies will be more likely to continue to hunt for food there. Get out into the wild, find a place where, you know, some high ground with good cover so you can see them coming. And
is there anything you can do to make yourself not as attractive to a zombie? Perhaps that's more of a Brian question.
Well,
obviously, we are in election season right now.
Obviously, you don't want to bleed on anything. So I would strongly suggest what you guys have not realized is zombies aren't very... It is very difficult for higher motor functions, dexterity, if you will. So if it is difficult to climb or reach the location at your bed, I mean, even a simple locked door might be able to prevent a zombie from coming in because he can't get his hand around the glass to undo the bolt or something. But if you think you're going to outrun a zombie on the high plains in the middle of a mountain, you're f***ed.
Pretty much. And, you know, I'm holding a document now. This was actually published, and you can go online and find this. This was published on the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, published a zombie survival guide in 2011. So, they say better safe than sorry. You need water, food, medications, tools and supplies, such as a utility knife, duct tape, battery-powered radio. In the middle of a zombie apocalypse, that's not the time to be tuning into This American Life. We probably need to try and find something a little bit more substantial.
This American Unlife?
And then they also want important documents, copies of your driver's license, passport, and birth certificate. As an ex-zombie, did that have any bearing at all on which brains that you ate?
Obviously, that's a very sensitive subject. I can tell you that no IDs were checked.
So you had no biases?
Again, I would strongly suggest when, if this epidemic gets out of control, to not be traveling abroad or in the middle of an open anything. The best thing to do is obviously lock your doors, lock your homes. If you don't have a home, find a hole, cover yourself over it, something. And then if you want your pocket knife and your radio, that's great. But at the end of the day, it's probably shelter, shelter, shelter that will save your ass.
So what else is in your document there, Simba?
Well, you know, they say that you want to make sure you have good clothing and bedding, and of course first aid supplies, because, you know, you're a goner if they bite you, but, you know, if you treat basic cuts and lacerations, which are kind of like blood in the water, I would imagine, for the zombies, that those would be elements that you would want to include. Now, all of these completely go out of the window if you're talking about zombie tigers. In fact, the only time that I can think of in history that we actually had any evidence of this is was chronicled in a movie that I think everybody saw, The Ghost in the Darkness. I don't know if you remember that one.
Yep.
two lions that were hunting down a set of railway people who were trying to build a railway across Africa at the time, which actually on forensic evidence, because both of them were actually taxidermied, forensic evidence suggests that they had high concentrations of selenium in them. So it is highly possible that we have already had zombie outbreak with big cats because they were already exhibiting behaviors that they don't ordinarily do. So this is not entirely theoretical. It's something that we should certainly be concerned about. And given the number of cats that are already in our country, that could cause quite a bit of a stir.
Well, clearly, we have evidence here with Brian sitting next to us that there are ways to save a zombie human to at least recovering status. Although I'm not sure if I'm supposed to call you a zombie at this point or not. But
what is the politically correct term for an ex-zombie?
Well, I don't like to be referred to as an ex-zombie. I think I'll just stick with Brian.
We'll go with that.
So, if a human is to get bitten, what can a human do to help save themselves?
If you're bit by a zombie, as long as you didn't get the mucus and the other stuff from the zombie, much like, I guess, vampire lore, you're probably not going to get infected, but unfortunately you might be a snack. So any area that has been infected, clean it. Any cut, if you can administer first aid, get medical attention, I highly recommend a blood transfusion if you have one handy. But at the end of the day, obviously any infected area, treat it like you would any other infection. And if it comes to, obviously, you know, you can't get a blood fusion, and you can't do this, and you can't do that, then fire does work to some degree.
Burn yourself?
Burn yourself where you've been bitten. Yes, absolutely.
Cauterization was a classic medical technique through the Middle Ages.
Well, as our resident pharmacist, Simba, do you have any thoughts on what to do if you have been bitten by a zombie?
Well, this has a lot of the same characteristics as infectious disease. So it's all about viral load and bioburden. So somehow, I guess you're supposed to take a guess on how much saliva that you have really encountered, which I guess you'll have to assess the zombie if you're lucky enough to take down the zombie. You can see if it was a slobbery zombie, or perhaps not so much. You know, the state of their dentition probably has a lot to do with it. So if you can examine a zombie's teeth as it's coming towards your neck, that might have something to do with how dangerous they might be.
Better focus than I'd have.
Yeah, you know, funny things happen when you're suddenly faced with the stark reality of a zombie breathing down your neck.
Well, I would, again, concentrate on survival first. Then if you survive the encounter, then worry about fighting the infection.
Yes, and plenty of soap and water, because soap and water cures everything.
Really?
And Coke.
Coke cures everything?
Sure. Coca-Cola. That'd be perfect. All that phosphoric acid, you know, you put on there. No, don't drink it.
Oh, okay.
You know. What are you thinking, you know? And your bones will go away and you'll be less tasty for a zombie, I guess.
So if we're back at the point of hunkering down and sheltering, how can you kill a zombie if one's approaching you?
With luck.
The classic technology is to shatter its brain and or disassociate the brain and the brain stem from the rest of the body. Or a shotgun or other, or shovel baseball bats to the cranium. Once what remains of the neural network is disconnected from the body or impaired, the zombie tends to cease to function.
Well, that seems kind of unfair. We're sitting next to a zombie American here. And so
this is probably the less offensive thing you said this evening to the zombie American, because beheading works on everything.
Yes, it does, but if we had a way to get them back, if we're just going to start randomly beheading the zombies and not give them a chance, then...
Well, we're talking about zombies who have chosen to enter recovery, or have people who have chosen to enter them into recovery, and those that are ravening lunatics!
They're not going to actually have a zombie that's going to actively ask for recovery.
Giving consent.
I was given recovery as I was unconscious. And that seems to be the best course of action. So if you want to save the zombie, then you beat the zombie to unconsciousness and then have a blood transfusion and a spiritual exorcism or any other ritual you would like to cast.
I'm having a bit of a philosophical problem with this. If you are undead, then how do you have consciousness?
That is an interesting discussion.
Yes, if you're already undead, then you can't be unconscious. You're already not conscious.
Unaware. I mean, there are some who argue that all the zombies are in a perpetual state of unconsciousness as their higher functions are pretty much zipped out.
I can tell you it is also very difficult to knock a zombie into unconsciousness. Don't expect one hit from a shovel to do it, like you would an average person.
So all those movies were lying to us.
In all the movies, either the zombie is obliterated or blown up or decapitated, or it's beaten into unconsciousness, and then you move on. You don't then come back and you don't see and say, well, maybe we should save this guy.
I don't ever recall seeing any documented zombie recovery.
Hollywood can be most unkind.
It'd be fascinating.
It doesn't matter if you have polio or zombieism. They usually, you know, are just concerned about themselves.
Well, obviously there must be a point at which you've been a zombie too long to be recovered.
Oh, absolutely. Again, some of my colleagues have all had unusual situations where we were able to, quote-unquote, be saved. The reality is like any other virus, it gets to a point where there's a point of no return. Obviously, with zombies, as your system shut down, that you've reached that point of no return. But some zombies in the attack are so damaged that they never had the chance to be saved.
That's true. Getting the zombieism can be very damaging. So I imagine that zombies from humans might be severe, but chances are that being attacked by a zombie big cat would likely not result in anything that could reanimate.
Yeah, even if it had the selenium virus.
I mean,
possibly. Well, at least parts of it could. As long as there's a torso and at least one arm, then they could just shamble along helplessly.
This is where the common sense rule applies. You're attacked by a zombie that only has one eye because half his skull is missing. It's pretty safe to assume you can't save that guy.
Also, we just mentioned that if the brain is damaged, that the zombie would be essentially
undead
person.
Well, as far as I'm not so concerned about unconscious versus conscious versus dead versus undead.
Okay.
There's ert and there's inert. So if it's ert, it will get you. If it's inert, you're okay, and then you can go on to plan B, whether you're going to save it or run to your high mountain.
Well, I can assure you that with all of the advances in scientific technology and drug delivery and design, that if there is enough money in saving zombies, Farmer will find a way.
Well, I actually do.
That raises an interesting point. Because Zora Neale Hurston, who I brought up earlier, she postulated that if science ever gets to the bottom of voodoo in Haiti and Africa, it will be found that some important medical secrets still unknown to science give it its power rather than the gestures and mystic ceremonies.
She was probably dead on. And the boy.
Very good.
No pun intended.
No. It's rubbing off. I gotta scoot further away from this guy.
Well, as our resident pharmacist, is there any work on coming up with some, since selenium is a virus, is there anything on coming up with a vaccine?
Not enough Americans have been infected yet.
Or at least reported.
Yes.
I have a suspicion that zombiedom is highly underreported. After all, they have self-help groups here in Central Florida.
Yes, how many of you knew that?
How many of you wanted to know
that? There is that, too. Appreciate all of you giving us these wonderful discussions today, but I do want to reach out to the audience. Is there anybody in the audience that has a question that you would like to ask one of our panelists? All right, come on up.
Hey, I'm Kristen. As I understand it, we have the undead people, the zombie people, and the vampires. Now, if they were all in a room, okay, close the doors, who would win in a fight?
Vampire.
Big cat.
Okay, now we have to have explanations. Well, what's your answer, Brian? So we
yes, that is an interesting question. And I knew another zombie. His name was Phil. And he had a similar question of if the vampire bit a zombie and the zombie bit a vampire, you know, who would be a zombie or a vampire or whatever. And at the end of the day, my question was, have you ever seen a vampire? And his response was no. So I don't know. If we were to follow Hollywood, however, I think the vampire would win.
So you and Ron both said vampire. What's your answer, Rod?
I said big cat.
He said big cat. And obviously, if there's a big cat vampire, big cat zombie, I'd go with that.
Well, yeah, I agree with that.
I think the Simba chose hammered on some of the points. The vampire is documented to have extraordinary physical prowess, has some mystic abilities, the ability to confuse, blur, and move faster than the eye can see, and in short, is pretty much a human big cat.
Well, but the vampire is obviously much better at makeup than the zombie.
They have better outfits.
So maybe if you had a zombie that worked in a garlic factory and then went after them, that might actually be a good combination.
Yeah. All right, well, a backup question then. Who would win between the zombie tiger and the zombie lion?
Oh, dear. So here's the thing. The lion is generally smaller than the tiger, and in general can tend to be not quite as strong and big as the tiger. But here's the thing. Lions are classic anxiety attack creatures. They are afraid of so much stuff. You know that whole cowardly lion thing? It's real. So they have, in real life, roughly 3 times the level of testosterone that a tiger has. So if you take a lion and you infect them as a zombie, and you basically say, you know what, you guys are going to get into a fight, my bet is that the lion is going to probably end up winning, if only because they don't care. They're going to just tear whatever is in front of them apart. And the tiger, at some point, the intelligence is going to kick in, and they're going to say, this isn't worth it. I'm going to eat something else.
Now, we got a question over here.
Yeah, I'm curious on the cultural origins of the idea of the dead rising up from the ground. How far back does that go? I was reading about Ragnarok. Are you familiar with that?
Ragnarok, the Viking...
Yes,
yes.
The dead rise and take over
the... The rising of the dead is believed, it's documented in Arabic. The ghoul rose from the graveyard and haunted the graveyard. It's believed that in, you know, primitive Neolithic cultures, where they sprinkled the red ochre on the dead, they were hoping to encourage them to come back up and re-give them the blush of life. So it is an ancient. I don't know whether it's a hope that's been twisted or a fear that is rising that the dead could come back.
Well, imagine this: if you're a primitive culture, whether you're Norse and you believe in the end of days or not, and you bury someone thinking they're dead. And like I said, the gestation process can take a while. And suddenly that person rises up a day, maybe 2 days, 3 days later. Then obviously, after you have a great battle, you're concerned about, oops, maybe that army comes back up in those days.
Well, the other thing is that medical practice was so ill-conceived in the past that one of the jobs of the grave diggers was to walk the graveyard at night, because they would literally put a bell on a rope in there, into the coffin, and there were people who were saved by the bell because they recovered consciousness and rang their bell, and they came in and dug them out near death, but came out of it.
Dead ringers
saved by the bell.
That's exactly what it is, yeah.
Dead ringers.
That is where that comes from, yes. Actually.
I have a question for Mr. Zombie.
You can call me Brian.
Brian?
Prefer.
Zombie recovery is new to me. I didn't wear it, was around, wasn't aware of that. Alcoholism, you can recover from the disease, but you can never drink again. Drug addicts can recover from the disease, but they can't use drugs. So, do you not eat meat?
That is exactly right.
Okay.
And I make sure that in my environment, I'm never exposed to raw meat or blood or anything of that nature, because it brings up certain feelings that I don't wish to explore.
Any other questions?
Yes,
from the audience,
sir?
Yes, I was just wondering, now that you're recovered, can you be reinfected, or are you still infected, or can you be reinfected, or do you have a level of immunity from it if you were to actually be bitten again by a zombie?
Yes. The answer is yes, I can be reinfected. I don't have the antibodies, quote-unquote. In my particular case, all of the plasma was more or less removed from my body. So I was that was the only reason I was able to recover. I suspect if they were able to make antibodies and fully understand the virus and make an antiserum or serum from zombie blood, then I would not be speaking with you here. I'd be in a lab somewhere.
Is there anybody that has an actual immunity that's ever been bitten that just didn't turn into a zombie?
Yes, that has been documented, where the immune system has fought off the virus before. Now, of course, this creates a whole separate set of issues because the virus theory has not yet been completely proven. So perhaps they just had a decreased susceptibility to whatever spiritual component has been brought up, if indeed voodoo is involved or something along those lines. But there have been people who have the scars of being bitten but are not exhibiting zombie symptoms.
Well, it could also be that they have an immune system which is capable of recognizing misfolded protein and destroying it, as opposed to allow it to perform an inadvertent replication.
This question is for Brian. You said earlier that you at your support group, mm-hmm. you have enunciation classes weekly. Mm-hmm. When you're reintegrating to being human again, your speech patterns aren't so good yet. In order to make it easier, do they take you out to dive bars so you just blend in with all the drunks there?
Well, what's interesting about that is no, they don't take us to drunk bars, but there are other reasons why they don't do that. Mostly because there are liability issues. The longer you've been a zombie, the more difficult it is to control yourself. Luckily, I wasn't big on red meats before I became a zombie. I think that might have made my transition easier. And again, I wasn't a zombie that long. There are those that are quote-unquote ex-zombies, or at least they're living beings, but they can only speak a few simple, slow words, the kind of vocalization you're familiar with.
Moving over again.
So it's mostly about retraining yourself on speed more than anything else. Everything kind of slows down your zombie from the way you do things. So it's very difficult for me to speak at the right speed more than it is for me to enunciate the words.
Why are you looking at me when you say that?
I was just thinking, benefit from the program.
So that you know what you're going into when you go to these classes.
Right.
Yes. Any other questions from the audience?
We got another.
I got a question for Brian. So how many steps are there actually in the zombie recovery program? And what are they?
Yes. I can tell you there are 12 steps to recovering from heroin.
From heroin.
There are 47 steps to recovering from zombieism.
Wow.
Sure. And the first step, of course, is to admit you have a problem.
How do you do that with suppressed cranial function?
Or have it admitted for you.
Have it admitted for
again,
you.
Again, we probably haven't been clear. This is only effective against ex-zombies. Obviously, a zombie is not going to want to save itself, so you're going to have to save it for it.
Ah. So if it's someone I do deeply care about, I'll make the commitment to get them to the state where they can admit they had a problem.
Yes, after the blood transfusion, of course. And then you can perform the spiritual hookah-pooga if that helps.
And if I don't know them, bam, bam, bam.
If you want to live.
Decranialize.
Is that a legal or is there some other term they're using for that?
The decranializing of a zombie?
To submit somebody involuntarily.
I mentioned earlier that zombies, in fact, have no rights. So killing a zombie actually changes nothing in a court of law.
I appreciate all of you guys doing this for us today, giving us insights on zombieism and all the wonderful things that come with it. Do you guys have any final words before we close out for today?
Don't panic.
That's a good one. Simba?
Panic.
And Brian?
Lock your doors. Whether or not you choose to panic or not, you lock the door first.
Well, I want to thank our panel members and our audience for participating in this evening's event. Thank you very much for joining us, and we'll see you next time.